And so to another arm of the law, Women's Month, for all the criticism of the pink ribbon sales opportunities, it does give us an opportunity to pause and reflect on women's progress in many spheres of life, not only their physical safety, but their ability to pursue careers in whatever field they choose. And my guest in studio today is one such example of a woman blazing a trail in an industry that would once have slammed the door in her face and not even let her into the building. Her name is Megan Rogers. She's a director at law firm Cliff Decker Hoffmeyer, where she heads up their oil and gas division. And Megan, you say the words oil and gas, I'm betting 99% of people are picturing a cowboy in boots and a hat with bad stock of locker room jokes. You must be used to people being quite surprised when you walk into the room.
Yes, I am. Good afternoon, Pip and listeners. I am indeed one of the novelties within the oil and gas industry, and I accept that. I embrace that. I started off with very little prospects in the sector, to be perfectly honest. I built, fought, and ended up being given the opportunity because of sheer determination.
Yeah. And that doesn't just apply to the particular sector you've gone into. It applies to your whole life story, Megan, because before we talk about oil and gas, I want our listeners to appreciate what you've gone through to get to own the title of lawyer. Because you grew up here in Cape Town, you matriculated from Athlone High School. How early on in your school career did you know that the law was where you wanted to end up?
I would say, and back in those days, it was called Standard 8. Mm-hmm. I became a very enthusiastic reader of John Grisham novels.
Okay.
And that's what sparked my interest in law. At that point in time, your parents were giving you the option to either become a doctor or lawyer. Those were the mainstream sort of industries you'd go to post-matriculation. And I ended up with that option, but the desire and the passion to study law just grew from Athlone High, from that sort of grassroots level. It was very difficult for me to pursue law post-matriculation. Funding was one of the biggest problems. There aren't many bursaries around for law students, and they're just a large number of law students. So at that particular point in time, I found myself having to self-fund. And in order to self-fund, I needed to get a job. So I immediately entered the job market, as I'm sure, you know, lots of listeners have had to do as well. Mm. You sort of have to find your way. I did that. Took me approximately 4 years to get my funding together to start studying. And I was at a point in time, it was very sort of by design. At that particular point in time, UWC was offering part-time lectures, which they don't anymore, regrettably.
That's
so
a pity,
And I was then able to enroll in the UWC part-time lectures, did my LLB undergrad for 5 years, worked full-time, studied part-time, which was quite...
I mean, you say that and about to move on to the next sentence, but I go, but wait, hang on a second, because let's just talk about what that actually effectively meant. Yeah. I mean, Megan, you were, if I understand it correctly, you got a job answering phones in a property management company. So you were spending your 9-to-5 day answering telephone calls, working for 1,700 rand a month, saving up enough to start studying, and then you were working a full day, getting onto transport to get you to lectures, getting home after 10 o'clock at night and still having to work on assignments and study for tests and exams. That's a very full day, to say the least. I mean, talk to us about how you actually managed to do all of that.
The driver was passion. I wanted to study law. I wanted to be there. I wanted to do this. And those obstacles sort of just, you just get through them. You just go through the motions. You sort of what I call soldier up. Mm-hmm. You've got to have a very supportive family base as well, because they hardly see you during that period of time. It's assignments after assignments. It's weekends being sacrificed, study groups. But I was fortunate in that I had a very supportive family base. They accepted that I had made this commitment for 5 years. And I knuckled down, basically, and managed to make the 1,700 rand work.
Sure.
And that's essentially the story. It wasn't an easy road, but it's possible. I think that's the message. It is definitely possible.
Were there ever people who were saying to you, this is ridiculous, it's never going to happen, you need to give up on the idea of law and just focus on building a job somewhere else?
Being in the university environment, being surrounded by friends, I can honestly say that that wasn't my experience at all. It was a very supportive environment. UWC is a great university in terms of providing support to not only its full-time students, but also its part-time students at that particular point in time. So they were all very encouraging. I found it quite supportive from that perspective. I did well. That helped. I was a meritless student, so that certainly kept me motivated. But I suppose in the workspace where I'd been answering telephones, you know, it was more of an inconvenience on my employer at the time that I had sort of to rush out the door at 5 o'clock and, you know, go off to class. But all in all, you know, even taking that into account, it was still probably the most rewarding experience of my life, sort of making this commitment, doing it and making it work.
How did you feel when they handed you that degree?
It was the most relieving experience, first of all. And finally done, you know, I didn't have to rush off to class at 5 o'clock in the evening. And then it was a case of, what do I do? Then it was that, what do I do with this piece of paper? Where am I going? There's a whole world, a whole legal fraternity that is waiting for me, so I assumed, open arms, what do I do? And it was a bit of a mixed emotion at that particular point in time, because it's not quite done once you get that certificate. You still have to go and figure out what type of lawyer you want to be.
And did you have a clear sense by then which particular branch of the law you were going to end up in? I mean, oil and gas is not on the top five. When people think about the glamour of becoming a lawyer, they think of, I'm going to be a human rights crusader, or I'm going to work commercial law and make tons of money. I'm guessing that oil and gas is not high on the shortlist. So how did you end up in that particular field?
I was fortunate enough to be able to do my articles at a large commercial law firm, which is always a benefit, because then you're exposed to
a huge range of
legal areas. And at that particular point in time, I had done one rotation in the standard litigation field and corporate and commercial. But there was an oil and gas department, which was quite small. It was at that time run by a 70-year-old legal practitioner. And it fascinated me that he could, at 70, still be running this, you know, huge department. And I think that was what engaged me. You know, I wanted something sustainable for myself. If he was doing this type of law at 70 years old, surely there must have been something that kept him
going and interested,
motivated each day to come to work. Mm. And then I made the concerted effort to knock on doors and say, within the team in this commercial law firm, I want to join your team. I want to be there. I have no clue what you do, but I want to be there.
Yeah.
And that level of enthusiasm actually was contagious, and they loved the fact that this person who knew absolutely nothing, was busy training at the moment, wanted to be there so badly to figure out what it was all about. So it's again about passion, enthusiasm, and sort of going and putting yourself out there and saying, I want this, will you make a way?
So did anybody say to you, okay, so now I'm going to tell a story that still horrifies me to relate, but I'm guessing you might be able to relate to it yourself. So I've got a relative who recently finished her law studies at UCT and started looking for articles, and had to knock on a lot of doors, as you've described, asking for opportunities. And at one firm, and I'm not going to name the people involved or the firm involved, but a senior partner in a law firm said to her, this is not a job for a woman long term. You should really rethink your career prospects and maybe find another direction to go in. I was quite flummoxed. I didn't know whether to be irate or perplexed or confused when I heard that, because something similar was said to me in 1990 or so when I toyed with the idea of going into the law. It was perhaps understandable then, for it still to be said to a young woman in 2018 is shocking beyond belief. Did anybody say that to you, particularly given the kind of law that you were proposing to go into, that said, you know what, oil and gas, this is one of the most male-dominated sectors in an overall sector that was still male-dominated. Did anybody say to you, this isn't a suitable job for a woman?
I did get that when I, when I'd made my decision to settle as an oil and gas lawyer. Because once you do your 2 years, you then have to go into a specific department.
Yeah.
And start practicing that area of law. So I had then, by my first rotation in that oil and gas team that I begged to be in, decided this is where I want to stay. I love it. It drives me. I learn every day. And I was told, no, perhaps you should consider going to another area first, because, you know, that's very technical, the area that you're wanting to be in. You need to have, the wording I got was, a different foundation. Mm. But it was that message of, perhaps it's not suited for you given the male-dominated sort of environment that it is. And I flat out rejected it. I said, absolutely not. I control my ultimate destiny. And if I'm looking at a long-term career, I'm going to go after what I'm passionate about. I want to do what I'm passionate about. And so, yes, to answer the question, absolutely, I encountered that. I definitely encountered that. And I think still today I get the question of, you know, 10 years later, I'm still getting the question of, like, women in the oil and gas, sometimes they don't quite know what to do with me. But I think for especially for the younger lawyers coming up and facing that sort of, those sort of statements, which should definitely not be happening at 2018, the response to that should be quite firm. It should be, absolutely not. This is 2018. Women are equally capable to men. Do not ring fence me and put me into a specific box. I'm capable of so much more than what your perception is. And I think the glass ceiling approach in that sort of environment would just be, it's not the type of environment you should be in as a woman. So perhaps it's good that, you know, she didn't pursue any
well, any prospects, her response was to say, okay, well, I'm, you know, if that's your response, I'm no longer interested in applying for a position here. And she turned around and walked out the door, which I thought was quite a brave thing for a 21-year-old to do, who's, after all, trying to secure a career opportunity. But it's got to be rejected outright when it's encountered like that.
Absolutely.
Do you feel, I mean, she in 2018 probably has the feeling that there is the backing of an army of women standing behind her to support her in that rejection, which might not necessarily have been there when you were knocking on those doors. It is the profession as a whole is changing and it seems to be consciously making an effort to change in terms of gender representation.
It is, and it has, and my law firm in particular, Cliff Decker, has made concerted efforts to ensure that there's equality in terms of allocation of work, promotion opportunities, remuneration. We focus on those key areas to ensure that we have to be honest about the marginalization which has occurred in the past, and we have to address equality in a sort of progressive realization approach. So there's got to be concerted effort to promote women and to promote those previously disadvantaged groups. And that's got to be the first effort. You have to acknowledge that it existed and in order to progressively, you know,
correct the imbalance.
The imbalance. So that's the first step. And then the second step is to ensure that, you know, opportunities at article level, at admissions level, at junior level entrance into the market is not prohibited in the manner that she was. So it's a two-step process. Women, in turn, who've reached or who've gone beyond that alleged glass ceiling need to now look back and become conscious consumers in terms of promoting women throughout the organization and supporting other women as they come up through the ranks. So that's how I see my role within my organization in particular, is to ensure that, yes, the obstacles are removed, but we must still not forget that those obstacles existed and we now need to create balance.
For those who might have joined us late to the interview, my guest in studio is Megan Rogers, who is director at law firm Cliff Decker Hofmeyr, where she heads up their oil and gas division. Lots of respect for your interviewee, says somebody on the WhatsApp, another person relating to your description of working full-time, studying part-time, with the comment that studying an undergraduate degree while working full-time is very hard. I did it. Also, being a mom and going through job changes, it really is tough. Lots of people just acknowledging the obstacles you overcame, Megan. I mean, when we talk about ensuring those opportunities are there, there are concerted efforts to make sure that the intake into university studies is more equitably balanced. There are opportunities coming out of the system into articles, we hope, addressing that imbalance. How does the industry overall look? You've said that your firm is making a concerted effort. Do you ever, you might still encounter the fact that you are, I don't want to use the word oddity. What was the term you used? You are something unusual in particularly oil and gas. A novelty, thank you. But it's not a novelty any longer to have a female lawyer. Nobody bats an eyelid at that. That shows how far we've come in a relatively short space of time, doesn't it?
It does. It absolutely does. And I think that women have had the opportunity to prove themselves technically. We're no longer having a debate about whether women can do this area of law or whether they can't in 2018. It is about technical skills. Technically, women are equal to men in terms of what they can produce. So the debate is no longer about whether this suits, you know, women and their home life sort of environment and whether it will be a conflict. That's not the debate any longer. It is down to proving yourself technically amongst your peers and your clients. Mm. And if you win on that leg, then that's the type of competition you want to be in. Mm. So, yes, 2018 is definitely not a stage at which we're going back 10, 20 years and saying, can women do this type of law? I think there are sufficient women who have proven that they can.
Asked and answered a long time ago. Mm. I'm interested to know what you've observed internationally, because I know you've not only worked here in South Africa, you've worked on projects in dozens of countries across four different continents. Did reactions to your presence in this sector differ vastly from continent to continent? Did you have experiences where perhaps it was harder for you to have to prove yourself in other countries than here in South Africa?
Strangely enough, South Africa's been the toughest jurisdiction.
Really?
And I don't know if it's because it's home. So you definitely rate yourself differently. But in Africa, in Nigeria, for example, East Africa, there are quite a number of qualified oil and gas female lawyers. Mm-hmm. So it's not a novelty to see a female negotiator walking into an oil and gas discussion. In South Africa, that's still very much a novelty. There are very few female lawyers who practice in this sector, so much more males, male counterparts. So this has probably been the more difficult jurisdiction, but our practice area focuses on oil projects in East Africa and West Africa. I do a lot of work in Namibia, where I'm warmly welcomed. It's not unusual for them to see me walk in the door. But certainly, sort of in the beginning, before you'd built up this relationship and where you were assessed technically and they said, okay, good, you've got it, you know, we understand why you're here, there was a bit of skepticism about me walking into a room as a black female. But that you need to sort of, you need to embrace that, see that as a challenge and walk in and take control of it and be there technically, be present technically, be present commercially in my area, and you earn respect. You earn respect of your counterparts. Be more prepared, has been my motto. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it was a bit of a lady walking in on high heels on an oil rig scenario, as I explained. But once you're in the room, it's over to you. It's over to you to put a good demonstration of your skills and capability.
Well, Megan, all that can be said is that thank you on behalf of the other women who will be able to enter that room, because you went first and banged down the door on their behalf. It's been a pleasure having you with us today, and our very best wishes for your continued success in your field.
Thank you, Pepper.
Megan
thank
Rogers, for director at law firm Cliff Decker Hofmeyer, where she heads up the oil and gas division.